Hey, this is Craig Finn. You're listening to That's How I Remember It. I started this podcast to talk to various creative folks about the relationship between memory and creativity, and how memory affects the stories we tell each other and ourselves. Today, I have a very exciting guest in Amanda Shires. Amanda's an accomplished solo artist, a member of the Highwaymen, and a fiddle player that's played with a ton of people, including the Texas Playboys, Billy Joe Shaver, Justin Townes Earl, the 400 Unit, and many more. Her last record, Take It Like a Man, was recognized as one of 2022's best in many publications. And although I don't personally make these kinds of lists, it was definitely one of my favorites as well. I'm so grateful Amanda came on to speak about that record and so much more. We had a really great talk. Here's how it went. The history's rewritten when the memories get meddled with. The way that I remember it. Amanda Shires, thanks for joining us. I'm going to start this how I start each of these podcasts and ask you, do you consider yourself someone who has a good memory?
I can't answer that question with a yes or no.
Well, qualify it then, if you can.
I feel like what we do with our memories is the reason. It's kind of like how we get through our lives, you know. I think a lot of folks are guilty of rewriting things. And I also think like it's all dependent on how you actually feel in the moment, because I don't know if you've heard the Molly Drake song. I think it's called I Remember Oranges. I remember oranges and you remember smoke. Like, different takes on the memories too.
Yeah, I really love this concept of you know, how we misremember, how we build stories sometimes, our own stories on things that we misremember. You know, we kind of build these buildings that somehow end up crooked because the foundation's a little off. How do you think your own memory or your own relationship with memory affects your storytelling or your songs, et cetera?
Well, you know, I can say that it affects my songs in that If I don't remember the details well, I can afford to make better ones.
Yeah.
And if I want to make a few ugly situations better, I can do that like I've done before on a song.
Sure. When I started this podcast, I one of my theses was that all the writers I talked to would say they have a very good memory and they're telling the right side of the story. And that hasn't necessarily been the case. I'm someone who thinks I have a good memory.
Jason has the retention of, I don't even know how he does it. Mercy has it too. But Jason, he learned as a defense tool growing up. I learned the other way. I learned to forget and go on, you know?
Yeah, well, that's something when my partner and I have had arguments, I sometimes can bring things up from September 2015 or something, especially if it's a conversation. I can really remember it. I've probably used it to ill effect, and I don't think that's really great.
Well, you know, once you have an argument and settle it, it's bad form to come back to the old argument.
Well, no, it wouldn't be that. It would be more just like, you've contradicted yourself now 7 years later, which isn't fair either.
No, because you grow, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, because you grow and you can't, you know, something you said that far, but I do remember it. One of my other theses about the songs and I'm asking about the stories is that details sometimes, you know, like when we write a fictitious piece or a song that's didn't exactly to happen to us, sometimes the honesty shows up in the actual details. Does that track for you?
I think the details make a better song. I think that honesty, I guess, happens if you can communicate the emotion that you're trying to communicate. I think the details are what actually make a song, because that's how people relate to songs. You build your little world, and if you don't have anything they can hold on to in it, I don't think that think it goes easily into the land of abstractions.
Yeah, one of the guests who was a TV writer said something about a hollow bunny, where if the details aren't right or aren't true in a story, it ends up like eating one of those Easter candies.
Yeah. I think, you could be honest in a song and also honestly need to fix one of the details because it doesn't sound real sometimes, you know? Like, you could, if you wrote a song and you were like, and we blah, 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 and the Eiffel Tower. Well, most people have never been to it. So you could either say that and be like an indie artist and be real cool or and brag about the Eiffel Tower or something. Or you could talk about the, I don't know, I'm just relating this in a lot of different ways. Or you could, the Eiffel Tower in Vegas, that might be a good one because a lot of people have been to Vegas.
I find myself when I listen to songs, like if you had me rank the lines of a song, I'd always like the one with the detail, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it's also where you can make the song not the same old. It's usually where you can turn the cliches upside down, too, it's in the details. Yeah. And John Prine told me one time, he was like, what I like to do with the details is I like to put a cup, you know, if so, there's a cup or there's flies or there's a screen door or there's something that, you know, in the room, even if it wasn't, it could still have happened in the room, but you have to be more than just in a kitchen.
Put
the people in the kitchen. Yeah.
I had this memory myself of what my parents didn't have a lot of music around, but they had a few records. And I used to listen to Paul Simon's Greatest Hits a lot. And there's that Slip Sliding Away, that song. And he says, I know a man who came from my hometown where passion flows. But in the third line, he said, Dolores, I live in fear. And when he said that name, in the third line, rather than the first, it snapped into focus for me. Now, all of a sudden, this woman has a name, and I can see her better. And yeah. I think that tool, I really, you know, I'm 51 now, and I realized, like, that might have been, like, my biggest songwriting lesson when I was 7 years old.
It's perfect.
I do that all the time, like, wait to reveal their name. Because it's a trick. It's not a trick. It's just like, it's like the camera moves or something.
Right. I've never really used a name in a song like that. Maybe once, but now I'm making a note to write a song with a name in it. I wish Harry Styles would give names in his songs. I am so curious.
Well, yeah, it's almost like I don't have children, so like sometimes I hear a name I like and I can think, oh, I could use that, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
How about, are there early memories of, do you have early memories of music? Like what was, you know, first things you remember about playing or hearing music?
Hearing music first. My granddad on my dad's side of the family, my parents were divorced, but we spent a lot of time in the pecan orchards and the peach orchards gathering peaches and pecans. Like, I'm talking about using a tractor with the shake, you shake them and get them, and we go do the thing, and then we peddle them on the road or we take them to a place and sell them. The whole time the truck radio would be on a station. And it was the best country of the year, those years. You know, the George Strait.
Yeah.
All that, the Brooks and Dunn and all that kind of country. And then when granddad went home, dad would turn it to classic rock. So that's my earliest memories. And then my mom listened to pretty much whatever the pop station was playing.
When did you start playing?
I got a fiddle when I was 11. I started playing professionally when I was 15.
Was there first music that was like yours versus your parents or outside of your family or anything?
Yes, R&B and rap and hip hop. And I learned fiddle. I wanted the fiddle after I got the fiddle. I didn't know why I wanted it, but I'd been listening to my hip hop and rap and going to violin lessons, you know. And I was like, that's it. That's what I want to do. And there's a synthesizer part on West Side Connection's Bow Down. And it goes, meow, meow, meow. Turns out that was a synthesizer and not a fiddle at all. So my whole career is a sham.
Well, you got to synthesizers. I mean, you got that's pretty amazing. How about like, and I've been asking everyone this because I'm really interested in this. Is there music when you listen, you know, when you listen to music, is there music, does it connect to seasons at all? Do you have music that like I only listen to in the summer, I only listen to the winter, or is that not a thing?
Definitely. I definitely have that. I think that's one of those beautiful things about music, that the way that it occupies time. Yeah, I like to listen to shit tons of Richard Buckner and Jason Molina in the fall. Yeah. That's what I listen to in the fall and the winter. Yeah, and in the summer I don't so much, unless it's like nighttime and I'm suffering my normal bouts of insomnia.
How about place? Like, does music change like where you are? I mean, you're on tour a lot, etc.
I've been on tours, like, some this year. I got to leave twice for long periods of time. But place, you know, sometimes I think when we talk about place, I tend to think about states of mind. So sometimes, you know, if you feel in a certain way and you need a certain kind of music, you put it on. Mm-hmm. But place to place. You know, sometimes it's fun to make your own playlist, you know, like when you're driving around or riding around for that town. But yeah, sometimes when I'm on the West Coast, all I listen to is Tom Petty and a little bit of Roy Orbison. But I also do that year round. But sometimes I like to put it on and see, like, imagine them driving around, checking their mixes, looking at the same things I'm looking at.
Yeah. I mean, I have like Sunday morning music for sure. And then in the city, in New York, since I've lived here, like electric Miles Davis in the summer, there's something about, it sounds like traffic. It sounds like noise. It's noisy and busy. And that's music I would never listen to in the winter.
I always wanted to live in New York.
Well, still time. You're right. But yeah, I think it New York has changed my listening habits. There's certain things that I don't. There's music that I think of as wide open music, and I don't listen to nearly as much of it when I'm home.
I listen to New Music Friday every Friday.
New Music Friday?
New Music Friday, yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, right on.
Yeah.
Well, a friend of mine does Full Album Fridays, where he has to listen to the full album.
Oh, I challenged the Full Album Friday to that 72-song Live at the Fillmore Auditorium that was released recently of Tom Petty's.
I haven't gotten that yet.
But oh, my God. They got it on streaming right now. I'm still waiting for my vinyl, but there's some magical moments.
I got a car for the first time in 21 years this year.
Did you get a driver's license?
I always had a driver's license because I grew up in Minnesota, and I never let it lapse. But I got a car, and there's a Tom Petty Sirius station. And
there is.
It just stays there.
Yes. It's worth the whole subscription.
As we talk about memory, it makes me sad that, like, you know, like you think about this, and I saw Tom Petty one time, which is great. I'm glad I saw him. But then I think about all the times I could have seen him, you know? And maybe he's a legend, obviously. I always knew that, but I also feel like I personally underappreciated it or didn't.
Right.
You know, there's some feeling about that.
I always liked the underdog nature of his songs and songwriting, for sure. Speaking of memory, time and place for stuff, I remember not liking specific, like, Grail records just because I didn't like it. And then later it came to be something I really loved.
Yeah. I mean, I went to college in 89, and Full Moon Fever was the dorm album, you know? And it was too much. I heard it too many times. And I didn't, you know, it was like playing out of every room. And now I think it's like obviously a classic and a beautiful record.
That happened to me with Ace of Base, and I still haven't recovered.
Well, maybe it's a few years down the road. Like, as far as art and music, books, etc., are there particular eras that you're drawn to?
I mean, yes and no. I'm kind of in this era of writing right now because I've read a lot of stuff. There's just, I kind of have a little bit of a baggage everywhere I go with this, because for most of the, like, literary times that we've been allowed to write and not use a false name, there hasn't been a lot of women to read, and which is fine. I love a lot of men writers, but I'm digging this era, and I really like the artist de Kooning, and I really like his wife's work, which I just newly discovered. Thank God for the internet. But yeah, as far as like periods and reading about that, no, there's too much restrictions. I like a love story though, so I'll put up with something if there's a love story. But it's just, I just get kind of actually disgusted sometimes because I'm like, ugh, took us so long to get to this point and we still don't have bodily autonomy, or, you know, we're still telling, you know, Lady Lucci how to dress at 75 when she looks awesome. Let the woman wear a strapless dress. Yeah.
Right. I've been asking everyone that, this idea of eras, because, well, for instance, I just saw like this film on the early 2000s New York rock and roll thing, and it was all right, but what I really was tripped out by is that I moved to New York in 2000 and how different it looked in like 2002. I was like, I couldn't concentrate on the foreground because I was obsessed with the background. And I was like, how did it change on me in 20 years so much? I don't think that. And I think with memory, a lot of times when I watch films that happen in my lifetime, mm-hmm. I'm sort of obsessed with that because it's confirming sort of mm-hmm. what my memory is. The mm-hmm. older it gets that's still within my life, sort of the more interesting. Like
Seth Galifianakis live at the Purple Onion when he's cruising around and he's driving his crazy van. That looks like how I remember California used to look.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, all of that. And just like how men used to, like, I don't know, like when you go somewhere.
Oh, yeah, dressing up and stuff.
I mean, on an airplane or you see like an NFL football game and the men are wearing suits and you're like.
I feel like that's coming back. I think that's pretty cool. I mean, it takes a lot. I know there's a lot of folks that still can't tie a bow tie, but it looks damn good when you want to wear one.
I mean, I think I just had a conversation with a guy that I know who's younger. I was like, you guys, it feels like the younger people, to me, wear very comfortable clothes versus like, and I was like, you know, and he was like, well, you wear jeans on an airplane? And I was like, well, yeah, if I'm wearing jeans, like, I don't think I have to get in like a complete leisure to sit for 3 hours. But
I mean, and in some cases you have to when you get Delta Southwest full flight and they've squished the seats up so much that everybody's spilling their drinks on you. It's probably best to wear your leggings.
yeah. Well, I mean, with the men, there aren't as many choices, I feel like, to look okay. You got an MFA at Swanee, right?
I did. I don't know how I did that.
Yeah, well, a huge, rich literary tradition. And your career was already, you know, as a songwriter and a musician, was already happening. And I'm curious what drew you to doing that and how it might have changed you as a writer.
I like to do things and then I fall in love with things and I get obsessive about things. Mm-hmm. And that happened to me with words. I think that I always feel like I have to have some kind of, I can't just ordain myself a writer ever. I could never do that. Even if other people can, I just never learned how to do that. And so I was just trying to, A, learn how to not work on instinct alone, and B, be able to argue with myself better when I sit in the room and write a song, because I would get into, you know, the disagreements on the page that are time-consuming and unnecessary. And I felt like if I had more of an education and more tools in the toolbox, I could probably move around more comfortably on the page and at the same time not beat myself up the whole entire time of songwriting.
And so did it work?
Yeah, it worked. It worked almost too well, because now I listen to things and I'm overly hard on the lyrics to things, and I forget sometimes that not everybody wants to write that kind of song. And a lot of folks want to write a song that's nice and chill to listen to, and we don't have to, you know, think so hard. And I've been working on balancing that in myself, even just trying to, I don't know, lighten up a little bit. But I don't know, I take it so seriously. Wait, I don't take myself seriously, but I take the work way too seriously.
Your record, Take It Like a Man, came out last year. New York Times named it the best of 2022. It's showing up on a lot of lists right now. It's a great record. I've been enjoying it for months, but like in preparation for this, I listened to it and read every lyric, you know, right along with it. And there was some stuff on the page that came out that I already knew were the words, but there's something about reading along that was profound in a way that hasn't been, even on songs I like, as I've prepped for other of these. And I think that may, you know, curious if you think that might be some of the diligence or the poetry. I mean,
absolutely, absolutely. Like, I don't fall into the folks that believe a song is a poem or a poem is a song unless, you know, you set it out like that. Like, there's a couple of people that have done that type of work, but I don't think every single song's a poem or anything. But I do think that definitely influenced how I do line breaks and how things line up on the page, for sure.
Hey, I'm Craig Finn. Here on That's How I Remember It, we often talk about music, so I wanted to mention DistroKid and their new app for iPhone and Android. DistroKid makes music distribution fun and easy, with unlimited uploads and artists keeping 100% of their royalties and earnings. Over a million artists rely on DistroKid to get their music into Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram, and all the major streaming services. With this app, you can sign up and pay for a new DistroKid account or sign into an existing one. You can upload new releases. You can get notified when you've earned royalties. edit your account details, check your streaming stats, add lyrics and song credits, edit release metadata, and so much more. The DistroKid app is now available on iOS and Android. Go to the app or Play Store to download it. In the song Take It Like a Man, I know the cost of flight is landing is such an amazing line. And that one, but I knew that already, that popped off. But to the chorus, the actual statement, I know I can take it like a man. I felt like when I read it, I came up with this thing of like, okay, there's this sort of macho, I can withstand this, which is the way the saying, you know, is mm-hmm. often used. But then there's also a taking versus giving. Mm-hmm. And I wondered if that was intentional. I mean, was I reading too much into it?
No, you're not. There's a whole slew of ways that it, sometimes just that phrase that's been, you know, overused and overtaught, even to the point of that people are not parenting like that anymore. But it goes exactly where you think it goes, and every time you think of something new that it could mean, it means that too.
Right. It was a revelation as I read it. And then I just out of my own curiosity, fractured 13ths is such a beautiful phrase. 13ths is a strange number. I mean, it's a loaded number. Mm-hmm. Did you choose that? Just curious, as because of the way it sang, or was there a thought of 13ths beyond that?
Yeah, it's a musical reference to the way music theory works. And then, you know, I'm describing another person and we're talking about music here. So, yeah, it's a musical term, and then it applies to the relationship as a whole, I think. It's a stretch, you know, when you play that on a piano even.
Now that you say that, and I picture it on a keyboard, I have a keyboard mm-hmm. here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. It's almost painful.
Yeah, exactly.
In Stupid Love, like, there's another one that's like, you know, I'd heard the song a bunch and Ringing Me Out, which I was singing along and thinking about ringing out like a wet rag, you know? And then I realize ringing out, it's preceded by a line about bells. Uh-huh. And thinking about ringing out like bells. And that was uh-huh. another one that I was like,
yeah,
oh,
well, that
wow.
one's actually about ringing me out. That's like when a dude or somebody, could be any person, goes down on a person with a, you know, goes down on another person. That yeah. could be, in my case, I'm a woman. So that's right. what that is. So you keep singing that and we'll keep thinking that you're good at it.
Very good.
But also that works with rag too.
Yeah, well, you know, ring like a ringer, you know?
Right,
It's all this, it works both ways.
It does. That's the beauty of it, I think.
As I was listening to all the songs and sort of thinking about it through the lens of this podcast about memory, et cetera, it struck me that like the songs on this record to me are very present versus a lot of the songs that I prep for these discussions with other artists. Like in Everything Has Its Time, when the record ends on, at least on the vinyl, I think it says, for worse or better, nothing lasts forever. And so the songs to me don't seem maudlin. They kind of lay the facts out bare. And I'm wondering if this is by design. Are you deliberately making sure these are happening in the now? Are you, you know, avoiding that sort of maudlin or looking back?
Yeah, that's the first time I got that question, and that's exactly right. I set it out to be as in the present as much as possible, even so much that I recorded like 22 or 20, I can't remember, 5 songs, and the ones that dealt with time in the past tense are just chilling, you know, over here mm-hmm. on my hard drive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a revelation to see this. I was like, wow, because I'd listened to the record a bunch, but like that was yesterday. I was like, these are really happening. And so many, you know, as I was looking for things to talk about, I was like, these are happening now. They're not looking back. Is nostalgia unattractive to you in that sense?
Oh, I love nostalgia. That's some of my favorite things to do. I like, you know, have other songs like Harmless where it's like looking back, and then I don't feel like it's that maudlin, and unless you're looking back, it feels like that happens a lot when you're looking back on your youth and you're sad about being old, you know, because it really, you shouldn't be, you should be glad you made it.
Do you think, I mean, my partner Angie and I sort of have this talk, and she thinks I'm more nostalgic than her, and she goes to as far as saying, like, it's a dude thing.
I think it's also romantic. I think it's a thing that happens, too, with people that tend to be, you know, more of what they call those, what do they call those romantics? Hopeless romantics.
Yeah.
Like, any kind of people that are into romance and romantic things, nostalgia plays a big part of that, I think. To circle to our other point, the rewriting of our own memories in some way, because sometimes they're not as beautiful as we made them out to be.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's what happens. I mean, I sort of think, like, in the dude sense of it, like remembering the big game or something that happened a long time ago and reliving it and sort of, you know, reliving the big moments, etc.
That's good, because some people don't ever celebrate the big moments.
Yeah, but you also hope there's some ahead, right?
Oh,
you
know what I mean? Definitely, definitely. Well, you know, they were fatalists too. Those,
right, right. Yeah. Yeah, and it's hard not to be a little bit as you cross certain milestones.
Mm-hmm. Or keep injuring yourself in the same ways.
Right, right. The first song on the record, The Hawk and for the Dove, obviously mentions two birds. The next song mentions loons, warblers, wrens, falcons, birds, etc. In Empty Cups, there's trees, the sea. Throughout the record, there's an awareness of nature, thorns, wolfsbane, superbloom. There's instincts and animal attraction, etc. Do you look to this nature to sort of frame where our humanity sits? I mean, I saw out your window just a little bit ago, and there's obviously a natural scene out there unfolding, and there's bird feeder, etc. I guess, is that how you sort of frame where we sit in this world?
I'm a naturalist, I guess, but I think because I grew up in the country and I grew up, you know, working with my dad and my granddad and them on the land and then later in greenhouses wholesale, you know, as they would sell to places you would buy your flowers from, I developed a relationship with the land and things that grow and the animals out there, and also just that's the nature of growing up in the country. I find a lot more examples of animals, you know, freedom and simplicity. I find that it's like easier to think of in those terms for me as to how, well, this is, now I'm getting really vague. I mean, sometimes I look around and I see things that are, it's easier for me to explain things in the context of nature, because I'm already talking about human nature or my own nature as a person. For those necessary details to fit people in the space that you're living in, you have to have something. And the things that I'm good at finding or observing are in nature, because that's where I am a lot of times. I'm not super good at putting people in the, you know, in big city places, because I don't spend enough time in them.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense. It's sort of in my mind connected to that in terms of memory. There's also a sense of tradition, and your career has operated both in and out of country music. And, you know, you played with people important to history, fiddle with the Texas Playboys, roots all the way back to Bob Wills. You played with Joe Shaver, toured and collaborated with John Prine later in his career, founding member of the Highwaymen, and also in the 400 unit. These are major figures in American and Americana music. But you also push way outside of these traditions, especially on the last few records. And does this enter your head in any way when you're writing and creating music? Or do you just make music that sounds right to you?
I just make music that sounds right to me. But I started learning Western swing and jazz at a young age. So there's a thing that happens when you've learned all the standards and played them all and sat in with everybody and all the keys in the world. And I just, kind of like with the thing with going back to school, I get into a thing and I get into it until I feel like I've passed burnout to where I keep going, and then I change. So I did that, and I still love Western swing and country. I even played with Jody Nix the other day in Texas, and I love that, the complex, you know, chord changes and a lot of that stuff. But for me right now, I'm trying to figure out how to. A lot of times folks, when they see a fiddle, want to say, that's country. And you don't see a lot of folks with a fiddle, because the fiddle's not very cool, apparently, these days. You know, it goes in and out of fashion. What I've done is just, I've been developing a violin fiddle sound that fits in with the rock band, like Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit. there are a lot of cool things I can do that a lot of people wouldn't think you could do on a fiddle. Like, I could chop heads with the best of them on guitar if you're not scared to turn me up in the house. And I can twin fiddle and guitar like Thin Lizzy if you wanted. And I'm proud of that. And I've been learning a lot of guitar things on the fiddle. And then also Jason's been doing some things with fifths on the guitar lately. I am trying to figure out how to do the fiddle in the context of Amanda Shires, who is kind of country, but I think I'm more rock and roll, but whoever wants to call me whatever is fine. But that when they see it, they don't automatically put it into this other thing that it doesn't really fit in. I consider myself more of rock and roll in the old school sense of, like, not old school, but I can't, like, you know, I can do all that.
Lonely at Night was one of my favorite songs on the record. The line, "Stop with these little wars," I super love. But I was listening to it, and I started hearing Prince singing it, in kind of like the Sign of the Times era. There's that song on that record called "Slow Love," and it has that. They both have this real soulful elegance that kind of blows me away. And there's a sense of timelessness there, but it's new, and that's exciting to me to listen to. But there's also a sense of on the record of, like, documenting a specific time, as we mentioned, like with the presence.
That's what they all tend to do, you know, for recording.
Well, yeah, I mean, you talked in the Terry Gross interview about those fault lines, in particular documenting it, like, a rough time in a relationship. And do you feel like making records allows you to sort of chart your story? Or, like, I sort of think of it as, like, marking my height against the wall a little bit. Like, here's where I was in 2017, etc. Do you have a sense of that? Like, this is what I was thinking about at that time. And do you ever go back to listen to the old ones?
I never listen to the records once they're recorded. I recently, though, with the Christmas record and Take It Like a Man, I made the lead sheets, or the musical sheets, made into a little book with the lyrics. So when I do have to reference one to look at it, to learn it, I don't have to go and listen to myself. I could just read it on the page. The thing about the time, marking the time, I feel like I do that definitely when I make a record. But I wrote To the Sunset in about, it was either 2016 or 2016, I believe, because in High Women. But that, a lot of those stories were from my mom's perspective that I wrote. But when I put Take It Like a Man out, I was either going to release a record that was about time, or I was going to release a record that had a lot to do with my marriage. And then that took a minute to decide on, because I knew that it wasn't just me that would be involved with the criticism and everything that goes with that. But in the end, I was swayed in the direction of let the best song win. So it came out that the record that was about time is canned. But, you know, that's what you do. You kind of write your songs and then decide later, I guess, what's going to make the collection. Because it's not easy to have like a marriage or like a romance that people, like, sometimes think about or not. I don't know what they do, but it's hard to, it would be hard, I think, for anybody to talk about when shit's not right, like, even if it's just boyfriend, girlfriend stuff. Because that sucks. But
that,
here we are.
That's very hard. It's absolutely put under a microscope in a way that it wouldn't be if your partner was less famous, etc., you know?
It would still be hard on everybody.
It's still hard. It's hard to have a relationship,
exactly.
Period. But
yeah.
But you know, it you know, they're going to be looking for clues in your record and then his record and vice versa, etc. And it could be never ending. And maybe it is. I don't know.
I guess that's cool, cuz you don't have to think about that when you're just writing, you know, in your little room, that nobody has to hear it until you decide that they can. Like, am I ready to endure this, or is this going to, I don't know.
In the end, you have a choice to whether you put it on the record or not, I guess.
Yeah,
you understand what it means.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense, like, you know, the problem, the song from 2020, obviously, you've been outspoken about women's reproductive rights. And I'm thinking about that, you know, as I was prepping for this, that song comes out in 2020, and, God, we're further away from where we should be than when that song came out. And was that, I can't remember the exact timing, but was sort of the changing of the Supreme Court?
It was when Amy Coney Barrett was getting confirmed, like going through that stuff. And I was just playing the tape out and I was like, damn, this is going to be the end. This is the worst. And then it was and still is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's depressing, but it is a mark. Again, it seems like a marking of time. And unfortunately we're looking back to 2020. But yeah, it struck me as I kind of put the dates and all that together.
And then after COVID, I was pregnant and outside of the uterus, I was pregnant in my left fallopian tube. I didn't know that because I thought, I'm just a pregnant person walking around. And then on stage, it burst open and ruptured. And then, I was like, the show must go on. I felt pain. I have a high pain tolerance. 18 hours later, I'm getting emergency surgery and I've been internally bleeding forever. Mm-hmm. And I had to go back home for a year to get better.
Yeah.
So that sucked. And then 10 days later, shit hit the fan in Texas, and there's a medication you could take if you got pregnant in your fallopian tube that will sometimes abort the little cells that are in there causing your life or death experience. And then that, now you can't take that. You can't get that. They're like letting people burst all over the place and such. And then they're trying to reimplant things into places that it's like, it's impossible. What am I, you're going to put my fallopian tube in my uterus now? What do you think you are? This just sounds crazy, but there's all kinds of crazy things that have just made it harder and made things worse. And there's lots of folks dying every day.
Yeah.
And it just really sucks. And I try to think about ways that can get better, but I don't see any yet except for the occasional state, turning here and there. But I don't know. People are like, well, at least we got the Senate. And I'm like, at least my ass. You still have rights.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, the song is really striking. And honestly, now more than ever, unfortunately. I mean, it rings as we get further away.
The place that the money that was going to, the Yellowhammer Fund in the South, they provided resources and help for folks in the southeastern parts of the United States. I mean, they've shuttered, and you've got to look elsewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Well, on a fatalist note, I have one more
Perfect.
For you.
But, I love fatalism.
Well, one of the things I was thinking of when I started this podcast, which was connected to a record I made, and it was about how we remember those that we love when they're gone, how we carry their stories with us. And we mentioned Billy Joe Shaver, John Prine, no longer with us. I think I met you for the first time when you were playing with Justin Towns Earl, mm-hmm. who's also passed. Mm-hmm. I've also lost people, and other songwriters have been close to me, that I've been thinking about this for a long time, or at least the last few years, a lot. How do you think you carry those sort of, those people, those stories, those whatever lessons, whatever things you learn from them, how do you kind of honor them as you move forward with your own career and songs, etc.?
Well, first, I'm a fan of every person I've worked with. I made a decision a long time ago to only work with folks that I liked their work and that I could learn from. And they're folks that I play their records a lot of times, and I carry them with me in that way. And that I worked with them, there's so many good memories and lessons I learned along the way too, when it comes to even working on the stage and learning those things you learn, like how to deal with hecklers. Like sometimes I think about that, I was like, oh, that's how Billy Joe Shaver would have done that. Or when I'm dealing with like some kind of daily improvisation, like when I forget my shoes, I'm like, well, that's what John Prine would have done. And then, yeah. That kind of thing. And I think you can't help but carry them with you. But I also try to I just don't think about anything except for how much fun we had, really. And then also little daily things come up and I'm like, well, I'm glad that they're still living in song and they still like live in my heart, as cheesy as that sounds. But it's true, and I believe in angels, so I think they're still hanging around.
Amazing. Well, that's a great place to end. So thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you so much for putting up with me.
Oh, man, putting up. I enjoyed all this. There you are. Huge thanks to Amanda Shires for coming on the podcast. I really enjoyed the talk. If you haven't immersed yourself in her last record, Take It Like a Man, I think you should do that now because it's really great. Also, a huge thanks to you for listening. We've got more cool guests coming up, so please listen and subscribe. And keep joining me here on That's How I Remember It.